You are Locked On Mets, your daily New York Mets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello to all you amazing Mets fans. You're listening to Locked On Mets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. To get this show every day, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. You can also tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Mets. Now, we do have a signing to talk about as the Mets made a surprising move late on Monday night, signing Kevin Pillar to a one-year deal with a sort of complicated option. I'll talk about that contract in the first half of the show and what the Mets are maybe thinking about with this signing. Then later on in the second half of the show, we'll do the podcast I was planning to record all day, which is really diving in to what a platoon with J.D. Davis and Luis Guillorme will look like at third base if the Mets go in that direction. Before we get to any of that, though, I'm your host, Ryan Finkelstein. If you want to find any of my work, follow me on Twitter at FinkelsteinRyan. You can also find some of my writing about the Mets at MetsMorizeOnline.com. And at 1 o'clock today, you can see an accompanied piece to my topic that we'll talk about in the second half here, where I wrote about what a platoon between Guillorme and Davis will look like. But let's focus on the breaking news right now, which is that the Mets have signed Kevin Pillar to a two-year deal. And here's basically the structure of the contract. Then we'll talk about the player. He gets $5 million guaranteed. In 2021, he'll make $3.6 million. 2022, he has a player option for $2.9 million. Now, if Pillar exercises that player option, then the Mets can buy him out of the contract for $1.4 million. And that's how you get to the $5 million of guaranteed money. Now, if Pillar has a great year, wants to hit free agency, the Mets can pick up a club option for $6.4 million. So in some senses, that gives the Mets a little bit of a luxury to be able to keep Pillar if he's great, and then it'll turn into a two-year $10 million deal. If he is bad, it's $5 million for the 1 year. And, you know, if it's somewhere in the middle, maybe Pillar exercises that player option. It becomes a two-year $6.5 million deal. And maybe the Mets value him at that lower salary and do not buy him out for $1.4 million. What this basically means with the luxury tax is his hit will be $3.25 million this year. So with that being said, let's talk about the player. If the Mets had not signed Albert Amora Jr., I would say it's not the best move, but it's an okay fourth outfielder because he has not been great defensively over the last couple of years. And granted, Albert Amora has not been great either as of recent years. So right now, the Mets are going into this season with two quote-unquote defensive right-handed center fielders to complement Brandon Nimmo, but neither of them is the biggest of upgrades over Brandon Nimmo out in center, which is the whole point in having a player fill that role. Now, because these salaries are somewhat minimal, because the Mets did not trade prospects to get either player the way they have in the past for your Keon Broxtons or Jake Marisnyks, it's still better than what the previous front office did, but the problem in center field has not been addressed, quite honestly, since Carlos Beltran and a surprising year where Juan Lagares won a gold glove. Other than that, the Mets have really struggled to find any answer out in center field, and this does not help, in my opinion, by any stretch. You look at what Kevin Pillar has done recently out in center field, or just out in the outfield. He's been worth minus four outs above average over his last two seasons. Now, this past year, in 2020, he was worth minus two outs above average in only 54 games. You look at what Pillar used to be with the Toronto Blue Jays, where Marcus Stroman was pitching in front of him all those years ago. He was worth 52 defensive runs saved prior to 2018. His outs above average were also good. during that span as well, though that metric did not start being counted until I believe 2016 for outfielders and 2017 for infielders. For Pilar, since 2018, he's been worth minus 14 defensive runs saved. What happened in 2018? Well, he turned 29 years old and even fell off a steeper cliff when looking at all the metrics once he turned 30. So this idea that suddenly he's going to regress or revert back to the way he used to be defensively, I just don't see that happening. Now you look at his offensive impact, and I do think he brings a little bit more to the table than Albert Amora, simply because Albert Amora has been really bad offensively recently. And Pilar has had two somewhat productive offensive seasons in a row in 2019 and 2020. For his career, Pilar is a .299 on-base percentage guy. His slugging percentage is .408 for his career. His OPS is .707. And his weighted runs created plus for his career, which measures hitters based on a league average of 100, his weighted runs created plus is .87 for his career. 2019, Pilar, spending most of his time with the Giants, hit .259 with a .287 on-base percentage and a .432 slugging percentage. He hit a career-high 21 home runs, scored a career-high 83 runs, and had a career-high 88 RBIs. But this is modern-day baseball where you look at stats like weighted runs created plus, and that year his weighted runs created plus was 84, so still not an above-average offensive player. Really the only time his entire career when he's been an above-average offensive player based on that metric is in 2020, where his weighted runs created plus was 106. His batting average in 2020 was .288, on-base percentage .336, slugging percentage .462, for an OPS of .798. Still not an outstanding offensive player, but certainly an upgrade over Almora. When I look at this deal right now, you have three players who are, I would say, on the fringe of the roster, but Pilar is there. He got a major league contract. You have three outfielders that you're kind of wondering, how are they fitting in? So now we said Pilar is going to be there. He's going to be your fourth outfielder. Almora is another guy that can play center field, and at least believe there's some hope there because he's only 26, that maybe he can still be an above-average defensive center fielder. And then you have Jose Martinez, who can't field. He's essentially a carbon copy of J.D. Davis with less consistency. And now he is a guy who I think hopefully falls off this bench and ends up in AAA. Because if Jose Martinez ends up being the casualty of the Pilar signing, I can almost talk myself into it. Because I can say, you know what? Pilar is a better option to start over Almora. If Almora is there simply to be a defensive replacement late in games for Nimmo, and Pilar is there to go out and, you know, maybe play a little bit of left field when there's a lefty on the mound as opposed to Dominic Smith, and you keep Nimmo and Conforto in the starting lineup, I can kind of talk myself into it a little bit. Gives you another right-handed bat off the bench. He has been good against lefties. I can kind of get my mind around that type of a role. But if this is simply an idea where Albert Amora has options, they like Pilar more than Almora, so now Almora is sitting in the minor leagues, I don't love this because you have Jose Martinez who can't defend. You have J.D. Davis who can't defend. You have Dominic Smith who can't defend. So who are your outfielders right now? Brandon Nimmo, Michael Conforto. Nimmo, who should be in the corner spot at some point, but can't be for this team. And you got Pilar, who also should be a corner outfielder. So where's the center fielder? And that's my problem with this set of signings. I would rather have seen the Mets just throw caution to the wind and get Jackie Bradley Jr. at that point. Because even if the pieces don't entirely line up, even if you get into this weird place where you don't know how you can get at bats for Dominic Smith and how you work Bradley's glove into the lineup, at least you have talent all over the place. Right now, you have a lot of players who just don't move the needle. And to me, this is still a team that ultimately is going to have to rely on Dominic Smith in left, Brandon Nimmo in center, and Michael Conforto in right. And I just don't see the outfielder on this roster that can at least turn the Mets into an above-average defensive team in the ninth inning when they're trying to hold on to a one-run game. With all that being said, I'd almost prefer Billy Hamilton back than all these guys, because at least he'll give you something defensively. But regardless, we're going to switch gears now and talk about Luis Guillorme and JD Davis platooning at third base. Otherwise, I might be going on about this for an hour on this podcast, and we can't do that. So we will switch gears. But first, Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever, with 18 amazing flavors, including the Caramel Brownie Bar, my personal favorite, the Cookies and Cream, Cherry Barcia, Lemon Almond Cheesecake, Carrot Cake, and the Apple Almond Crisp. These really are protein bars that taste like candy bars. They come covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft and easy to chew, unlike some of those other protein bars on the market. And they are, of course, healthy, as these Built Bars come low in calorie, low in sugar, high in protein, and high in fiber. If you want to try Built Bar today, go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON to get 20% off your next order. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. One reason to repair and maintain your cars is to save money that you can then use for other important things like your mortgage or food. So why would you choose to spend 30%, 50%, maybe even 100% more for the exact same auto parts at a chain store or a new car dealership? RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts to customers online for 20 years. They have everything you could want, from engine control modules to brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks and have it delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and then choose the brand specifications and prices you prefer. So go to RockAuto.com right now and make sure you write "Locked On" in there, "How did you hear about us" box, so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliable low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. So I want to talk a little bit about a platoon at third base with Luis Guillorme and JD Davis. It's a topic I have mentioned in passing many times throughout this offseason, but I wanted to dive into the numbers. And again, there's a piece that I have that will go up at 1 o'clock on Tuesday about this very subject, where you can kind of read some of these numbers I'm about to get into. But the bottom line is the Mets clearly want to improve at third base. Otherwise, there wouldn't be all these rumors about Chris Bryant and Eugenio Suarez and Kyle Seager. They would just be saying, hey, we're comfortable with JD Davis. He's our starting third baseman. We're not hearing that. And the problem is clearly his glove. In 2019, offensively, Davis was excellent. Had a 136 weighted runs created plus. In 2020, he didn't quite fare as well offensively, but there was enough signs that you can believe in Davis's bat, and I certainly do. But I believe in his bat as a DH. At third base, though, he hurts you so much defensively that he doesn't make up enough of it with his bat. He has been worth minus 19 offensive runs saved in just 770 innings played at third base throughout his career. If you look at Daniel Murphy's first season at second base in 2012, he was worth minus 11 defensive runs saved in well over 1,000 innings played. So that means that Davis is worse at third base than Murphy was in his first year at second, and we all know how ugly that looked. So with that being said, you got to find a way to keep Davis's bat involved without putting his glove out there so much to hurt you, and that is where a platoon with Luis Guillorme makes too much sense. I've already talked about in the past how Guillorme has a better career WAR than Davis with a lot less playing time, and that just shows you the defensive value that Guillorme brings. He is outstanding with that glove. And you could play him at second base if you want to, shift McNeil over to third when you have a righty on the mound, but I just would like to see McNeil get the opportunity to play one position, the one he's most comfortable at, see him really thrive at that position and offensively, and also want to see him and Pete Alonso try to develop some continuity so that maybe McNeil can know Alonso's spots and where he can help him along a bit, because we know Alonso does struggle a bit at first base. Now, Guillorme obviously would help Alonso, but what do you do when there's a lefty on the mound and suddenly Guillorme's on the bench and you have a McNeil who's not as acclimated to playing alongside Alonso? It just doesn't work as well. To me, Guillorme can be outstanding at third base, and I think McNeil can be very good at second, and that's all that matters. Now, with all that being said, you look at what Guillorme did at third base in 2020. He only got 10 attempts at the position, according to Baseball Savant and their outs above average metric, yet he was worth one out above average. So he's going to be good out there if the Mets give him the opportunity. And what this does is it sets up an absolute dynamic left side of the infield where you have Francisco Lindor, who can play close to up the middle. You have Guillorme, who can cover a lot of ground. They will be able to stop any of those hard hit balls they can get to, and that's going to protect Dominic Smith a bit, who's going to be behind them out in left field. Now, what this does when you look at the offensive impact, I believe that the contrast between Guillorme and Davis offensively is not as stark as it is defensively, right? Offensively, yes, there's a drop-off. But Guillorme, since the All-Star break in 2019, is hitting .319 with a .412 on-base percentage and a .454 slugging percentage. That's good enough for an .866 OPS across 106 plate appearances. And his weighted runs created plus in 2020, albeit a very small sample size, was .144. Now, I don't think he'll produce that over a full season, but I think he'll be at least league average, if not slightly above league average offensively. And when you're bringing such great defensive value, that makes him an outstanding value player for the Mets, considering his price in particular. So with that being said, again, you look at the platoon. Guillorme does not fare well against lefties. He's a .513 OPS in only 38 plate appearances at the big league level against lefties, where Davis crushes left-handed pitching, has an .832 career OPS in 306 plate appearances. So this is a way to maximize both players. For Davis, he gets to start against lefties. He gets his three or four at-bats while the starting pitcher's in the game, and then he's replaced by Guillorme for defense. On Davis's off days, he's your first pinch hitter you call on off the bench, which is really valuable since Major League Baseball couldn't come to any consensus. We're back to no DH. That's valuable to be able to have a Davis to call on to face a lefty in a huge spot and really maybe produce some runs that can swing a game for you. Looking at Davis in 2019 coming off the bench, he hit .333 with a .404 on base percentage and a .690 slugging percentage with an outstanding 1,095 OPS. So he can thrive in a bench role, and this is a platoon opportunity where you can still get him at bats against left-handed starters, and I think he probably still would have maybe close to 400 at bats this season, even in a platoon role, because there'll be days where you have to, you know, mix and match, and maybe Pete Alonso goes down for a bit, and Davis maybe gets some time at first or in left field. There's options here where all these guys will get some playing time. The whole roster is not going to be healthy. But at the basis of your team is the platoon at third base with Guillorme and Davis. I think this maximizes Guillorme's glove. It maximizes Davis's ability to crush left-handed pitching. You put both of them in their best spots, and I think together they can really give the Mets a lot of positive value at a position that they're pretty unsure about right now. So I would still say, hey, if you could swing a deal for a Chris Bryant, by all means, get Chris Bryant. But otherwise, I'm okay with the Davis-Guillorme platoon. I'm just not okay with this idea of ignoring defense again, going back to J.D. Davis at third base, Dominic Smith in left field, Kevin Pillar as your fourth outfielder, and we're just going to try to mash some baseballs and strike out a lot of batters because our defense is going to be complete shit once again. Not okay with that. But who knows? Maybe that's the direction the Mets are going in. We're just going to have to see if there's any more pieces that get plugged in, if there's any more trades, and hopefully we get to see a lot of Luis Guillorme because he's going to fix a lot of those defensive problems the Mets will ultimately have otherwise. Anyway, that'll be all for today's edition of Locked On Mets. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you follow me on Twitter at Finkelstein Ryan and follow the show at Locked On Mets. Got another giveaway going on Twitter right now, a Dominic Smith signed photo. So follow both those accounts to check that out. And on tomorrow's show, we'll see if anything else happens with the Mets that maybe explains this Pilar signing a little bit further.